Category four, the top of the scale is 155 miles an hour, and that's where we are right now. The hurricane is at 155 miles an hour. That puts it at the very top of Cat 4, 1 mile per hour more, and it's back to a Category 5. So while it sounds good, it's not quite as good as it sounds, in that it's still every bit as powerful. So I guess if you want to be optimistic, and I would like to be, because this truly is the worst case scenario approaching New Orleans, everybody's nightmare, at least it's a movement in a favorable direction, if not really meaningful in terms of less damage. It certainly is movement in a slightly favorable direction, and that's a wonderful thing. Pressure is 910 millibars. It's located at 28.2 north, 89.6 west. And it still would appear as though New Orleans will take the brunt of the storm. If it continues as is right now, New Orleans is in just dead in the sights. Now, the levees, the water, the size of this storm surge, all of that remaining incredibly dangerous and probably going to breach several of the protections that New Orleans has. Nevertheless, at this hour, able to report to you an obvious slight improvement and sort of a little bit of a hopeful sign, dropping to the very top of the Cat 4 or Category 4 on the Saffir-Simpson scale for hurricanes. Right back, and when we do get back, it's an obvious duh. Whitley Strieber is a very good and old friend of mine. Together we wrote a book called The Coming Global Superstorm, as I know you're aware, which became the movie The Day After Tomorrow. So seeing what we're seeing manifest right now in the Gulf of Mexico is, believe me, for the both of us, a very eerie feeling. So appropriately, in a moment, Whitley Strieber. Again, one more person to sort of officially chat with here, Whitley Strieber, in a moment. Then we're going to begin taking calls. And when we do, it's only going to be from people either with incredibly important information or people in the affected areas, those remaining in New Orleans, those evacuating from New Orleans, and that would be many, many of you out there, and I think that's what talk radio can do. Just one quick note, Victor from San Diego says, Global Consciousness Project art is going nuts. Sounds like a Geiger counter on steroids with frequent whistles thrown in. For those of you who have been monitoring that, I have two things to say. One, I'm certainly not surprised that it's going berserk, but two, and this should stop the questions that are inevitably going to come, no, I would never in a million years consider doing any sort of consciousness experiment in the middle of a situation of this sort. It's the worst case scenario in my mind for toying with that power, and very bad timing. So I'm simply not going to do it. Don't ask. You know, I made this decision actually now, years ago, a couple of years ago, and I'm not going to toy with it any further. I recognize it's real, I recognize its power, and I am not going to toy with something of this magnitude. That said, here comes Whitley Strieber, author of The Coming Global Superstorm, co-author with myself, and of course many, many other books. And Whitley and I have talked about this sort of thing since we got together. Whitley, welcome to the program.
Well, it's good to be here, Art, and there is one thing that we can do, which is pray.
Yes, of course.
And which my website's newsletter sent out a request to everyone who takes that newsletter this evening to please do so. I have seen the power of prayer in my wife's situation.
I'm all aware.
Last fall, and so I know the Coast audience is good at this, so do try. And it's not an experiment.
Right.
Hopefully, maybe we'll get it down to a Category 3 if all goes well.
Yes, prayer is in order, absolutely in
Indeed
order.
Indeed it is.
And frankly, at this moment, that's about all that's left, Whitley, is prayer.
Well, it is.
What's going to happen is going to happen. It's right there. So, Whitley, you and I have written a lot about climate change, rapid climate change.
And this is part of it. It is exactly the sort of thing that I was afraid and you were afraid would start to happen, and it is happening. And the National Weather Service is saying this is only the beginning for this year, that there are going to likely be even stronger storms or more storms between now and the end of the season, which probably won't come until mid or late October. So we could be back on the air in a few weeks with another storm. Hopefully we won't be.
Hopefully not.
Unfortunately, New Orleans, the situation there is, it's almost unimaginable if this does not drop back to the point where the storm surge is under 15 feet.
Right.
And if the levees are breached, right now, they are looking at estimates predicting 60 to 80% of the city's houses destroyed by the wind. And with flood damage, in addition to that, a homeless American city, a million people without homes.
Did you say 60 to 80% of the buildings?
Of the houses.
Just destroyed?
Yeah, the houses in New Orleans are, I don't know how long it's been since you've been there, but it's...
I've never been there, Whitley.
Oh, well, I love New Orleans. I've been going there since I was a boy, and I must admit that I don't have much memory of the times I went there in college, because I tended to go there during Mardi Gras. Anyone who's done that will understand what I'm talking about. But I did have a lot of fun, that I do know.
I'm sure.
And we were just in New Orleans in last September and having a wonderful time. But it's an old city, and the center of the city is not built to withstand this kind of weather at all. The older homes there, the big old trees will go down. The graveyards are not deeply dug. And the result is that the coffins are going to come out.
I had heard, Whitley, that in New Orleans a lot of people were actually buried above ground. Is that true?
That's correct, yeah. You're going to have, in addition to the fact that there is a big chemical industry, a gasoline fractioning industry around New Orleans. So this water, if a massive flood occurs, is going to be toxic and filled with corpses. I mean, it's just it's unimaginable. I mean, you talk about a disaster of biblical proportions. This has been something that planners in the Army Corps of Engineers have been worrying about and concerned about through the past two administrations. The result, next year, the the Corps of Engineers budget for New Orleans is going to be slashed by $71 million, and planning or a study to figure out how to plan for the storm that's happening
tonight
is being shelved.
I wonder if the city of New Orleans is threatening with being shelved itself. I mean, if there was, for example, 30 feet of water, if that horrible thing occurred and there was 30 feet of water covering everything, you're right, it would be this toxic, absolute toxic soup that I suppose potentially could make New Orleans, not to mention getting the water out, but even if you did, uninhabitable for I don't know how long.
Well, for a very long time. And maybe permanently, the problem being that if what's left behind after it's pumped out is too toxic, it might be become impossible to live there anymore. And that could happen. If this stays the way it is, going in there with 150 plus mile an hour winds, mm-hmm. you're going to see a storm surge that will substantially breach the levee system. And this scenario, in some form, hopefully not the worst one we're talking about right now, will unfold. It will happen. Hopefully, if it drops down to a Category 3 and you start to look at 130-mile-an-hour winds, 140-mile-an-hour winds, perhaps not with with the thing beginning to break up, maybe it won't happen that way.
Well, it would sure have to start breaking up quickly. You know, I'm watching, as I'm sure everybody is, some television. I've got CNN, and the pictures that they're still showing, the radar photographs they're showing of the storm, show the eye wall extremely still well-defined.
Well-defined. And
big.
The other thing is that along with the slight decrease in storm intensity came a decrease in storm speed. And that means only one thing, that it may increase again in intensity, especially as dawn comes.
Oh.
The storm is, the reason the storm is like this, and we started on Unknown Country a couple of days ago, four days ago, warning that this was going to likely to be a very serious storm, because we could see the way it was tracking in the Atlantic, it was almost certainly going to cross Florida and come intact into the Gulf of Mexico. From now on, any time a tropical storm comes into the Gulf of Mexico intact in the absence of a powerful high moving down from the north in the continental United States, there's tremendous danger for a simple reason. Right now as we speak, the Gulf waters are, this is the second warmest season on record for Gulf water. And it is like a pressure cooker, that Gulf, because the water is very warm. There is a tremendous problem with sea life, precipitate decline of sea life in the Gulf. The Gulf is becoming a time bomb, not a time bomb, and it's blowing off right now.
Yeah.
And we're going to see this again and again and again.
Whitley, let me stop you and ask you, going back to what you were saying, with this eye wall reforming and all the rest of it, it went through that in the early hours, not too far from dawn, central time, I believe, yesterday. I always thought that a hurricane would intensify when the sun was out and there was even more heat and more energy being poured into it. But no, this hurricane chose the very early morning hours to do its intensifying.
Well, that's usually when they do intensify.
Why?
The reason is that the cooler the air in the upper atmosphere drops lower, and when that happens, the warm air billowing up from below
is more in conflict with. Oh, I've got it.
Yeah, and that happens during the early hours of the morning, and unfortunately, because the carbon dioxide and methane that's now in Earth's atmosphere in large quantities holds heat closer to the ground. Heat isn't radiating into the stratosphere the way it used to, and this is a result of which the upper atmosphere is much colder than it used to be. And this is why when this storm started, we were warning that it was going to happen very quickly. And in fact, it went from a Category 3 to a Category 5 to a Category 4 to a Category 5 very quickly.
Shockingly quickly.
10 hours faster than the original National Weather Service prediction.
Absolutely.
Because the stratosphere is much cooler than it has been in the past, and the lower atmosphere and the water are much warmer. And this is the scenario that we outlined in Superstorm, and it's happening before our eyes, quite frankly. I mean, we're going to see many gigantic hurricanes. I mean, this is going to become, unfortunately, the norm, and you're looking at a hurricane right now that if we're lucky, it won't take out a major American city. If we're lucky, it won't take out a major American city.
And that is going to take luck now, from what I can see.
It's luck and prayer. That's all we've got left. And think of it. Last weekend, nobody dreamed this thing was even coming.
That's true.
Just last weekend.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and we got another depression out in the Atlantic in the same area that Katrina started, and we could have another situation that if weather conditions don't change, and I don't know that they will. Where we're looking at another one of these things coming up somewhere. I mean, it's totally impossible to tell where right now.
Whitley, is there any location in the entire, we have a lot of coastline in the U.S., thousands and thousands and thousands of miles of coastline. Is there any single place along all those thousands of miles of coastline that it would be more serious for a hurricane to hit than exactly where this one is hitting?
No, because this city is below sea level. It's the only coastal city in this country that's below sea level.
So it's the worst possible place that it could
be hitting.
Worst
scenario, and this is why experts have been urging that there be planning to understand what to do to prevent New Orleans from being destroyed by a Category 5. That planning should have been going on 5-6 years ago.
Well, there was a man, they did some interviews on CNN and elsewhere, and he's been repeating this nightmare scenario. He's one of the planners of something or another in the city, some official guy, and he was saying, I've been screaming my lungs out about this possibility, and now here it is.
And it's a little line item deep in the budget, and they just slashed it. $71 million is going to gut the program that exists. And you'll hear them declaring an emergency and talking on the TV and the radio about how sorry they are for the poor people in New Orleans and everything else. No one will be talking about the fact that they slashed the budget and never did the planning that should have started years ago to save the city from this very scenario that's coming down on it like a
Out of curiosity, Woodley, what could they have done?
The major thing that needs to be done there is to understand what kind of water pressures the levee system can take, especially down at the mouth of the Mississippi, and what kind of in what sort of maximum storm surges can be expected, and where to put that water when it appears, because it doesn't have to go across the levee and into the city. I mean, we're intelligent; we can figure out ways to get it to go other places safer. And that would be what it would be all about, is revision of the levee system, essentially.
It would have to be, I guess, from what I'm hearing, one gigantic, very expensive revision of the levee system, because I'm hearing that this could be so bad the water will just, they talk about filling a glass of water and then blowing, and the water just blows right over the edge of the glass, right?
That's right. That's correct.
So,
and yes, it would be expensive, but what do we have to make some choices here. We are going to see, we are in the middle of a climate change situation. Sudden climate change is occurring. It's taking place right now. Methane is outgassing in massive quantities in Siberia because the tundra in Siberia is melting much faster because it goes farther south than the tundra in Alaska. The permafrost is melting. We see that the great columns of cold water that used to drop down south of Greenland that were driving the Gulf Stream. There were 12 of them. Now they're only 3, and they're not moving very strongly. We see the Greenland glaciers are turning into torrents of water. We see less ice cover in the North Polar region than at any time in history.
Adjacent area, 75-mile-per-hour gusts. So I'm trying to stay as abreast of this as I can. In the meantime, we have with us at this hour Whitley Strieber, and we're just going to kind of be going in this program. I'm not saying when we're going to end it. I kind of have an option to go as I want to go, and I'm going to just sort of watch and decide. We're going to play this whole thing by ear. That's what talk radio does best. Just sort of shoots from the hip. And so in a moment, we'll have Whitley back. We'll continue to watch the situation, give you details as we can. Katrina. Good morning. I'm Art Bell, and we're watching Katrina as it bears down on New Orleans. Paul from Calgary, Alberta says, "Hey, Art," referring to an earlier Fast Blaster. He's not kidding. The Princeton eggs are absolutely going berserk. Well, I'm not surprised at all by that, nor shocked in any way. I would imagine it to be so. That power is real. That power, I think, is established in my mind beyond any shadow of a doubt. But I reiterate, I don't understand this power, and therefore I'm not going to use it except to ask you to pray for a situation, a favorable outcome there. I think that's about as close as we can get, and it's virtually kind of the same thing, but not quite. Traditional prayer will be just fine. At any rate, Whitley, welcome back.
Well, it's good to be back, Art. I wish it was under happier circumstances. I'm just receiving a report that, 4240, which is 50 miles east of the mouth of the Mississippi River, is recording waves with heights of 40 feet and more right now.
And where again, please, is this?
That's 50 miles east of the mouth of the Mississippi River. And as you know, the National Weather Service is looking at possible waves as high as 28 feet.
Yes,
and that could be the kind. That's the kind of wave that would severely overtop the levees, and that storm surge is that strong, if it's above 20 feet, in fact, and significantly above 20 feet for any length of time, it's going to flood New Orleans.
Okay, here's a question for you. Suppose the worst scenario came true, and New Orleans was inundated and uninhabitable virtually for some period of time. I suppose people would begin asking if it should be rebuilt in the same place again.
Well, the question would be, could it be rebuilt?
Well, I guess that would be first. Could it be done? But even beyond that, should it be done? You've just finished documenting a lot of changes going on in the world right now that are going to produce increasingly large storms from your point of view. Is that a fair statement?
Well, that is a fair statement, and I think that areas that are marginal, like New Orleans, are just at risk. And yes, I think the question of whether or not we should absorb that population into the country or try to rebuild the city, if it was a economically and feasible thing to do in an engineering project that could be accomplished. Well, that's a decision that it will have to be made if this happens, if it's that bad. And you know, I have to tell you, I'm such an incorrigible optimist, and I just can't believe it's going to be that bad.
Everybody hopes you're right, Whitley.
I certainly hope I'm right, but I have to say that the reality of it is that this darn thing is still way stronger than it needs to be to cause this to happen. And
there is
a good possibility that toward dawn it will strengthen again.
It's
unimaginable.
It can go any way at all. But Whitley, if by some miracle and God's will, New Orleans survives to be habitable and it's all okay somehow, isn't this enough of a shock and a wake-up call that after this, assuming they survive, they have to do something, change the system of protection there? Or in other words, isn't this such a shock and wake-up call that they're going to have to move to change it?
Well, the problem is this. Other cities, Galveston, Houston, Miami, cities along the Atlantic coast, other cities on the Gulf Coast,
yes,
are all going to be clamoring for help, all of them. And how is a decision to be made as to which ones get it and which don't? Already, the administration has made a decision with regard to New Orleans, which is essentially to ignore the problem and to abandon it.
I know. I guess, though, I was asking, might this not be a big enough shock to cause them to rethink that?
I think at least that they would say they will, but then, you know, also knowing that it's not too likely to happen again, and not forgetting the fact, I guess, or they will forget the fact that I believe it was last year that Florida got hit by four hurricanes
right,
in a row.
Right.
They won't want to spend the money. And you know, there are other cities. I'll tell you a city that is in dire need of real planning and significant work on its seaward facings is New York City.
New York City.
Absolutely, because not so much Manhattan, but Brooklyn is at jeopardy. If a storm like this were to strike New York or in Long Island, that area would be terribly damaged, Category 5. This is, I believe, only the fourth Category 5 that has actually made landfall in the United States. The last one of any significance, the last Category 5 was Hurricane Andrew.
I don't know that that's going to be the case, Woodley. They did lower it to a 4. It's at 1.
Well, let's see what happens in the morning.
You seem to be suggesting that you believe there could be a strengthening. God, how could that happen?
Yeah, I do, because I just see those very warm Gulf waters, and the only thing that's preventing us that would prevent a strengthening is if the hurricane invested the land sufficiently overnight to where it couldn't draw enough energy to strengthen.
Isn't that possible? But, I mean, we've already got a portion of the hurricane over land, right?
Yeah, but it's slowing down. It's down to 12 miles an hour, and if it slows down more, the more it slows down, the more dangerous it is. And unless, of course, it went into reverse, which is unfortunately not going to happen.
Right.
But it slowed down from 13 miles an hour to 12 miles an hour, and we'll have to look and see what the next advisory says, if it's down to 10 or 8.
Isn't that odd, actually? Isn't it more normal for a hurricane, as it begins to actually touch land, to speed up and traditionally up into the northeast part of the U.S.?
It's really variable. It depends on how it's coming ashore, as to whether or not it's going to exactly what's going to happen. They will stop sometimes and churn for a while as they make landfall, because the friction of the land surface is greater than the friction of the water against the air, the moving air, and it does tend to slow it down. But then what will happen is that the hurricane will literally kind of roll up the front of a high pressure system, and they can get to going pretty fast when they do that, even over land.
Yes. Well, I've heard that there's effectively absolutely nothing affecting this hurricane. In other words, in terms of systems or winds that would push it or direct it in any way, it's virtually with nothing.
No, there's a high, but it's pretty stable. It's not moving over the central United States and over across North Texas. That is not moving.
Is this country, with the global changes that you talked about, is America going to have to rethink how they're building cities, where they're building, where they're farming, where they're doing just about everything?
Well, unfortunately, there's no way to predict yes is the answer. The problem is there's no way to predict how. I can assure you, if you live in Atlantic coastal areas or on the Gulf Coast, you need to think very carefully, because your future may be limited in those areas. As far as the rest of the country is concerned, Art, there's just no way to tell. The main problem is going to be things like Europe is experiencing right now, or just the past few days.
Yes,
is a phenomenal drought in Spain and Portugal, and flooding in Central and Eastern Europe beyond, in fact, so far outside of the records that it's never really happened like that there before. At the same time, a few weeks ago in Mumbai in India, they had 37 inches of rain in a day. Now, that's so much rain that cattle drowned where they stood.
So you're describing a situation that's worldwide. You're saying don't just look at this hurricane. Look at everything that's going on in the world and see a pattern.
You see a definite pattern of rapidly intensifying weather activity. It is getting much, much more intense.
I think it's absolutely undeniable, and I think most people would join us in observing that, because it's happening before our very eyes. You can't very well deny it. But on the other hand, Whitley, you see the CNN anchors talking to the people at NOAA, and the people at NOAA, when asked about global warming, just laugh.
Well, they have to.
They have to.
They want to keep their jobs.
Oh, that would be a career-ending move, you mean, to say,
I don't think it would help. John McCain and Hillary Clinton, a Republican and Democrat, just recently, a couple of days ago, together went to Alaska and essentially came back with the news that the place is melting.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I saw the statement from Senator McCain. That's what he said, that essentially that Alaska is melting.
Unfortunately, the administration has made a commitment from long before Bush was even in office that this isn't happening. And the fact that it is happening is just, too bad for them. I mean, I always say nature is numbers.
I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, you can politically say, this is not happening. I mean, it's like... It's like, I don't know, it's like having your wife come home, find you in bed with another woman, and just telling her, you don't see this, hon. You're not seeing this.
It's not happening.
That's equivalent.
And you would be making decisions under the radar of the country, and that a region as vulnerable as this should have the budgets in the areas that might help protect it cut, slashed even. Is simply incredible. I mean, it's like throwing matches at gasoline. It's utterly irresponsible, and I'm sorry to see it. I'm not a particularly political person. I'm an old-fashioned, middle-of-the-road American. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a liberal. I'm not a conservative. But I am practical. I'm real practical. And practical says we need to work on this. Because we got a lot of people in this country who have beautiful lives in a beautiful country. We want to keep it that way. That means we have to pay attention. Because in nature, no matter what you may say politically, no matter what you want to believe or don't want to believe, or what some idiot's telling you on the radio, and this doesn't happen to be one of them, I do know what I'm talking about. 2 and 2 in nature is always 4. It's never going to be 3 3/4 or 4 1/8, no matter what they say.
Well, I guess unless they say, no, it's 3. That is our decision. Here, we're signing here that it's 3. So there you have it.
Then we pay the price.
Yes.
Just like the people in New Orleans are paying the price right now. We pay.
Yeah.
If they say that.
I guess I don't know what else to say, Whit. It's what it is. We're going to ride out the next several hours and see what happens. But either way, you've brought to light sort of an angering aspect of all of this. That there was a study just slashed that would have, looked at how this
would have
city
at least
could have
looked
been saved.
At how to save New Orleans from a Category 5. Yeah.
And they decided not to do it. Perhaps the thinking is, there is really nothing that can be done. Could that be?
No, that's not absolutely not true. There's
that's not fair, deal. Huh?
No, it's not true. The first thing you need to see, you need to figure out which, for example, we don't even know for sure which levees are at jeopardy right now, because that sort of study has not been done. And depending on the angle at which the hurricane approaches a city like New Orleans, or approaches this city, approaches New Orleans, certain levees, some levees will be in jeopardy of being flooded over, others will not. But if you had planning and you understood what the situation was, you might be able to strengthen or have strengthened already
mm-hmm.
by raising their height the levees that are most likely to be breached. And that would help enormously, enormously.
We're not long-term planners. We're not good. Americans are not good at long-term planning. We never have been. We seem to operate by the emergency of the moment, and then we act. But we don't we don't plan long term. People are only here on Earth so long, and I guess that has a little to do with their thinking, Whitley. In other words, I'm going to be here so long, and after that, hey, we can't think like that anymore.
You know, when the British began working on the mouth of the Thames to protect London from inundations, from the ocean, back in the 60s. Now, if there is an enormous storm surge in that area, London will probably not be flooded because of the work that they did and have been doing. This is work that we should have started on. The planning should have started in the 70s, and the work should have been completed in the 80s. Instead, we sit here tonight just ready, having to pray, hoping we won't lose a major American city.
Yeah.
And incidentally, a city through which one-third of the energy fuel products that we consume in this country passes.
That's going to be a gigantic issue.
You are going to see gas prices go berserk next week.
That was my next question. And there's the answer. Next week, you'll see them going berserk. Is that
the futures are going to be probably up limit all 5 days, would be my guess, unless it's not as bad as it looks like it will be now. And if that's the case, then it won't. Obviously, it won't get that bad. But right now, it just looks terrible.
Is there any report yet, Woodley, that you're aware of about how the oil, I guess no one knows how the oil platforms right now are faring, right?
In all likelihood, they're fine. The platforms are shut down and evacuated. There may be some damage, but they are mostly modern oil platforms are engineered to take 200 mile an hour sustained winds.
What about the refining infrastructure?
It's very vulnerable.
It is.
It's vulnerable primarily because of all the piping and so forth that's exposed directly.
Because getting oil is one thing, but you have to refine it to get gasoline. Without that, of course, prices go absolutely up and out of sight. You think that'll happen just because of the futures anyway?
Well, it'll happen. It'll happen because of the fact that these refineries and so forth, and the oil platforms need to be shut down. And for an indefinite period of time, and if New Orleans is flooded and the area becomes unviable, then there's going to be a substantial amount of production of gasoline storage and production infrastructure that's going to stop working for an unknown amount of time.
All right, Willie, listen, we're coming to the end of this hour. I want to thank you for being here. And I'm going to take some calls. I'm going to try and take some calls from the affected area. But I really thank you for being here tonight.